The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
Welcome once again to what can only be called a transformative edition of the Answer of the Week. Here's how it works, kids.
I see what you did there.
My name is Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast. Many of you think I'm too mean. Too bad. Sitting aside from me is the nice guy. His name is Joe Patrick. Say hello, Joe.
I fight for the people.
Oh, please. Here's what happens on this show. Joe Patrick posts the question of the week on the Two-Headed Nerd forums. You can find them by going to twoheadednerd.com and clicking the forum button. It's awesome. Bunch of heady, intelligent nerds there. You will love to talk to them. From there, you guys can answer at the forums where you can write as much as you want, or you can call us at 402-819-4894 and leave us a 2-minute recorded message of your answer. Or if you're one of them super brainy computer types, we'll call you. You can send us an MP3 of your answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. You can add music, you can scratch, like, you know, DJ style, you can beatbox, whatever you want to do. But
a real Poindexter.
Before we get to any of that, I need to know what question we were asking these nerds.
This week's question came from Black Scorpion the 3 from the past. From the annals. I don't know if I used annals correctly.
I think it's pronounced anals.
From the annals of the THN forum archives. What's your favorite temporary character transformation in comics? Thor turning into a frog, Spider-Man sprouting extra arms, etc., etc. I have a feeling we might get some questions that aren't, or some answers that aren't necessarily limited to comics, and that's probably okay.
I'm all right with that. Yeah. Let's go to D. Murray. He hit us immediately the following day. Love this guy.
How's it going, guys? D here, answering your question in a week. How's Wayne in the forums? I'm taking a bow. You guys can't see that. So everyone knows who House Wayne is. It's yours truly.
It's D.
My answer for you, which is an awesome question, by the way. I love the hell out of this question. I was going to say Man-Wolf, but I have to say Sins of the Youth, where all the Leaguers got turned into kids. And all like the young Leaguers got turned into adults. Whoa. All the Titans and Young Justice and everyone else got turned into adults when the whole switch happened. It wasn't permanent, but it was still freaking awesome. I got every issue of that comic when it first came out. So yeah, that's my answer. From young to old to young, Sins of the Youth. Take it easy, guys.
Sins of Youth is what introduced us to Young Justice. Is that correct?
No, Sins of Youth came well into the run of Young Justice.
Okay, that's right.
But
that's right.
Yeah, it was like a mini event springing from Peter David's Young Justice. The original event that launched Young Justice was called World Without Grownups, where
that's what I was thinking of,
where a kid gets possessed by a genie or something, Mr. Mixelplick or whatever type of character.
Oh, the djinn or whatever they call it.
Yeah. He banishes everyone over the age of like 12 or 16 to an alternate world. And so there's nobody left on Earth but kids.
Yeah, I remember that.
Clarion, the witch boy, turns all of the adults into kids and all the kids into adults for fun because he's a real jerk.
Was this a 5th week event?
Not really.
It looks like it was a 5th week event.
It may have been. It may have been a 5th week event back when that was still a thing they did.
Yeah, because like all the story, like all the issues seem to have come out.
They were all one shots.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's why I was guessing.
It was bookended by 2 issues, prologue and a finale. And then it was a bunch of one shots. So yeah, I think it was a 5th week event.
Okay.
Yeah, it was super fun, cute. You know, it's like tiny Batman still trying to be intimidating.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's funny.
D? Good answer. That was fun. I like that one. I know I read it back in the day, but I have no memory of Sins of Youth. None.
Yeah. I mean, it's very light. It's not, it didn't have any really lasting impact, but it was still a fun time.
Fair enough. Let's go to the man with the question himself. Black Scorpion, the 3.
Oh!
Who said I see walking in these woods?
Nerds, I gotta tell you about why I asked the question that I asked this week.
I remember what provoked it. I was thinking about that famous Flash cover where he feels himself turning into a puppet, whatever that means. And I thought about that issue of Lois Lane I've got where she turns black for a day. You know, all those fun novelty issues of temporary transformation. And I thought about how when the 1970s hit, those stories kind of went away. And I like those stories. I mean, I knew that they were there to be an enticing cover and not really deliver on something lasting to the character, but I thought that they were fun. I always wanted some of that stuff, that fun, that playfulness, that sense of wonder. I felt like I missed out on that fun because those issues were before my time. Or so I thought. It turns out something did emerge during my lifetime, and I have no idea what compelled him to do this, but in 1992, probably my favorite Marvel writer, that's Mark Gruenwald, he decided to bring an obviously short-term change to a flagship Marvel character. He turned Captain America into a Wolfman. I will not convince anyone that it was good. In fact, there are things that were quite bad. I always hated the guest appearances from Cable and Wolverine, and this series certainly had them. But I think it was a comic that definitely knew what it was. It was stupid. Cap encountered a group of captive werewolf people. He was injected with a werewolf serum. Then he rallies the werewolf people to overthrow the baddie. Simple story, no consequences. I just liked that fun. But it also had one other big payoff for me. See, as a kid, I saw a picture of John Jameson, J. Jonah Jameson's son, in those Marvel Universe issues, and he was a space werewolf with a bow and arrow, and I kept wondering why Marvel was wasting their time with these other characters and leaving him behind. Well, nerds, Mark Gruenwald gave us Jameson again as Man-Wolf in this Cap-Wolf story. So thank you, Mark Gruenwald, for giving me the silly transformation in my lifetime, and thanks for giving me an issue of Jameson as Man-Wolf.
Whoa.
Cap-Wolf.
Cut himself off. Cap-Wolf is kind of universally regarded as one of the worst Captain American stories ever, right?
Yeah. But I mean, you know who loves it?
Laughably
Orah McWilliams.
Oh, I know a lot of people that swear by it. They're like, I don't care. I thought it was awesome. I was totally into it at the time. I mean, I can't say that I count myself amongst those people, but
No.
I certainly remember Cap-Wolf. It was the whole thing. We got a new caller here. His name is Jim Kettner. He wrote a very sweet email to us. I'm not going to read it, but Jim, thank you. That's quite the compliment. I like this guy already.
Hey, Two-Headed Nerd. This is Jim Kettner, a.k.a. Kettnerd, first-time caller for the answer of the week. Temporary transformations. Now, I have to say that this question had me thinking about none other than everyone's favorite ever-loving blue-eyed thing, Benjamin J. Grimm. Now, maybe it's just this travesty of a movie that's in theaters right now. While not wearing pants is certainly a terrifying transformation that I hope is temporary, that's not what I was thinking of. In fact, I was thinking back to the late 80s era of Fantastic Four when I started reading the book. And around that time, Ben Grimm got redosed with cosmic rays and all of his rocks just sort of exploded out. And he had this sort of dynamic, pointy stegosaurus
kind
of look for a couple of years. And I just have a fondness for that era of the Marvel Universe. And it was just sort of neat to see Ben deal with that revised transformation. And he had a romance with the replacement Miss Marvel, who also got turned into like a sort of proto oatmeal woman, lumpy skin
Sharon
thing.
Ventura. Person.
I don't know. It was a cool time. I'm glad it didn't last forever, but it was a cool look. And I don't know. That's what I got. If you would like to hear me and some of my buddies ramble about other nerdy subjects, you can please check out the Galacticus podcast on iTunes or check my comics and illustrations at ketnerd.com. Thanks a lot, friends.
Welcome aboard, Jim.
Yeah.
Comes correct awesome. With some Sick of It All as well. I used to love this freaking band. Spiky Thing. I remember the Spiky Thing. I also remember,
you know what?
She Thing.
She Thing, right?
What was She Thing made of? What was she? Because I remember he's like, she looked like someone dumped oatmeal all over her.
Well, she looked like the Thing looked when he was first dosed, if you recall, from like FF1, where he just kind of looked like a big
like mud man.
I mean, he was not wet, but he was definitely not as geometric, if that makes sense. He was more of a
he didn't look rocky.
Blob-like.
He looked like dried lava, maybe.
Right. And so that's how she looked.
I like that answer. Welcome aboard, Jim.
I'm on catnerd.com right now.
I love that he pimped his podcast. Pimp your
talented
stuff, you guys.
Dude.
When you call us, you get free airtime. Pimp your stuff. I mean, fit it into the time slot, but pimp, please.
These are some great drawings, Jim.
Is he good?
Yeah, this is super fun, cartoony stuff. There is like a terrifying toad wizard thing. I don't know what he is.
I try to stay away from toad wizards personally, but that's just me. So maybe
I
love it. Maybe I'm not the best judge. I was busy loading up Randy Andrews' call.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week.
Got the music level perfect,
week,
Randy.
You asked about favorite transformations. Well, guys, I'd have to say my favorite transformation is that of the original Jean Grey getting brought to the present in All New X-Men and developing her psionic powers. So good that she's able to become a pink entity using her full powers. That's my favorite. Well, that's it this week, guys. Hope you liked it. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.net. And my music this week is from X-Men 3, entitled Dark Phoenix. See you in a week. Bye for now.
I don't know what he's talking about.
In All New X-Men, where Jean Grey develops new powers.
And she turned into a pink entity?
Well, she kind of like powers up and she becomes this kind of glowy pink.
She's not Phoenix.
Purplish. What?
She was. It's not Phoenix. It's something else.
No, this is young Jean Grey from the past. Now that she's here in the future year of 2015.
Okay. The most recent Brian Michael Bendis stuff. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Where she's spontaneously kind of developed a new power.
Yeah. Her power started acting all weird.
Yeah. And so she, yeah, it's, who am I comparing her to? She's just like. Yeah, she becomes all glowy and purplish. Cosmic looking almost.
I think
I don't know that it's necessarily within the bounds of this question.
Is it? I mean, okay, let's talk about that for a second. Secondary mutations, like the Beast. Like he went from the old blue-eyed, oh my stars and garters Beast to giant Catman. Would that count?
Well, it would be because he went back.
Is he back?
Well, he got over it. He became less cat-like.
Well, slightly less cat-like, I guess. I mean, I would count.
Now he looks more like the original furry Beast. It's just that he got a haircut.
Yeah, it's not enough for me. I don't know.
I would say that counts because it was ultimately temporary.
So a secondary mutation that sticks, maybe not temporary. So
well, I guess we don't know how temporary it is. So the jury's still out.
That's true. She might be dead. Who knows? Randy, thank you for your call. Always good to hear from you. Your audio levels were perfect this week. You're getting really good at this, buddy.
Matt, we got another first-time caller here.
Charming Red. Oh, my.
This is Jessica from the Hangout podcast.
Oh,
she is
okay.
Part of the Inner Circle family.
Yeah, I was going to say, she sounds cheeky.
Hey guys, it's the mom who reads comics at Charming Red on Twitter from your Inner Circle podcast co-shows. And I'm here to talk about my favorite temporary transformation, status quo, whatever, with a character. And it has got to be Red Lantern Supergirl. I had been reading Supergirl since the New 52. After that, I went back and read other Supergirl stories. But in the middle of all of that, they were trying to make Supergirl this angsty, you know, enraged, somewhat bitter character because she showed up so much later on Earth and lost her whole family. And, you know, who wouldn't be in a bad mood after losing their entire planet? But it still didn't click right with me until they added the Red Lanterns. And I was already a Red Lantern fan. I'm kind of known for being a rage monster myself at times. And so having a red ring on her was just the perfect fit. Add to that crossovers in the Green Lantern series as well as the Red Lantern series, and I was in heaven for those few months. Oh, if they could just make Kara a Red Lantern all the time, I would be ridiculously happy. And plus her logo, just right on.
It was pretty cool.
I was trying to figure out who wrote that. I know that Charles Soule was writing the Red Lanterns book at the time.
Yeah, I think it was still Mike Johnson.
Was it? This was written by Tony Bedard is when this happened to her.
Oh, okay.
28 is when it hit her. Last daughter of, it was Michael Green and Michael Johnson. So yeah, that might be the same Mike Johnson. Michael Green was the guy I was thinking of. Yes, it was that Mike Johnson that wrote a bunch of Star Trek stuff. Him and Green were writing it as a team.
But it's a good book. I'm going to go back and revisit those issues that I missed thanks to Jessica's suggestion.
Yeah, I think I hopped off when Johnson left too, because Bedard, I'm about, I'll say 40-60 with Bedard. I don't love everything he's done, but I have liked some of the stuff he's written.
I like his cosmic-y stuff, though. And yeah, if he was doing Lantern stuff, that's probably pretty good.
I would tell you, Charles Soule in that Red Lanterns book was great. It was really good. And that's where I saw Supergirl doing her thing.
Cool.
Someone else from the Hangout has definitely called us.
Yeah. I think you're wrong.
There's no way to research that, unfortunately.
So. I think you're wrong, but just in case, welcome aboard, Jessica.
Yeah, I welcomed her right away.
I know you did, but halfway through the call, I'm like, man, if she called before.
They love it when we welcome them aboard multiple times. They love that.
It's true. That's
true.
Who wasn't
we welcomed aboard like five times? Who was
Ryan Mount. That's right. We welcomed Ryan Mount aboard at least a half a dozen times.
Enough of this. It's Toots time!
Toots here.
He's still
I thought
not
about
screaming.
Being a smartass with my answer and saying when Wolverine lost his adamantium in his nose and became a feral weirdo.
He wore a do-rag,
and
too.
And then I
don't
thought
forget.
Maybe I'll go with Lobo when he Never became forget. A woman and was grotesquely sexy and really obnoxiously boobed. But I love Simon Beasley's art. I'll forgive him for that. But what I have to go with here, guys, is... from Marvel Team-Up in 1979. It's an issue written by Chris Claremont and drawn by John Byrne. It's a beautiful book. Although I didn't get that book, I didn't discover this story until it was reprinted in Marvel Tales, issue number 208, from 1988. In this story, at the Metropolitan Museum, there is a bunch of artifacts on display, kind of Egyptian, Stygian stuff. Well, it's all revolves around an evil wizard coming back and everything like that. Well, there's
naturally
a sword on display that in the fiasco that happens in the book, Mary Jane Watson grabs the sword and she becomes possessed by Red Sonja. She becomes Red Sonja.
Oh!
And it's super fun. This story was also revisited in 2007. Dynamite Comics and Marvel Comics teamed up and did like a longer form story of this same sort of deal. And they brought in Venom, not just the evil wizard Kulan Goth from the first story. It's not as good, but it's interesting anyway. That's it, guys. That's going to be my answer.
There was just another Red Sonja book that I reviewed not too long ago on the show where another redhead went to a museum, picked up a sword that was there, and turned into Red Sonja. Like, that was the whole thing for this new Red Sonja story.
So, what you're saying is that they revisit this well many times.
Apparently. I don't know. I mean, as long as you're a redhead, you can be Red Sonja, I guess. I don't know if it counts for guys, too, but...
Fingers crossed. Yeah. All you gingers out there.
I never read that one, but I do recall seeing that cover several times.
I think Wooly Toots is standing in strict defiance of the people that called him out over the last couple weeks because this week he didn't even say Toots time.
No, he did. He went like this, Toots time.
No, he said Toots here.
Oh, he said Toots here. Is he trying to kill it? Is he trying to kill Toots time? Is that what he's trying to do?
Nobody declares Toots time but Toots, I guess.
I'm going to ride this guy until it comes back. That's bull.
To be fair, he usually records while his son is asleep.
That's true. But I mean, you can go outside, you know, yell at your neighbors. Come on.
Wake his ass up. He's a baby.
It's time for Tim Benson. Let's see if he screams on his intro.
Hey, calling in on this alternate character take, Thor as a frog type thing. And my answer, I'm going to have to say I'm going pretty broad here, but Earth X. You know, I missed a lot of comic book years, and so I read Earth X, and it was like a history lesson. I didn't really know which stories were different or out of continuity. I just knew I liked it, and those characters were great, whether they were the real or the originals or whatever. It just didn't matter. Still doesn't. I still love the alternate universe characters. So Earth X and unfortunately the sequel and trilogy as a whole are still kind of top books for me. Joe, I hope your answer is Astro City. Thanks.
Okay. Once again,
Tim, before we started recording, I had a passionate argument with Matt about being too mean to the listeners and letting them speak their minds and not cutting them off when they are just submitting free content for our show. And yet, for the second week in a row, you did not answer the actual question.
Nope. I will give him that they are alternate versions of characters, but we're looking for a temporary change in a character.
What?
You know?
What Tim did is name his favorite alternate universe, which is a question we already answered.
Which he also did last week. So,
did he? What was his thing last week?
1602. He said Marvel 1602.
Oh, yeah, 1602. Right. Yeah, 1602. So I don't know if he's trolling us or not, because he said, you know, the whole Thor turning into a frog thing. Yeah. So I know he understood the question.
He gets it, you know?
Tim, buddy, next week, you got to do better, man.
You can do this. Jacob Flaxington? This has got to be a new caller, right?
Man, we are wall-to-wall newbies today.
I don't know what the deal is, but I love it. Jacob looks pretty sexy in his picture, too. He's got a do-rag on.
I'm a long-time listener, British delinquent, and I am here to answer the question of the week.
And he's from across the pond!
My favorite temporary character transformation would have to be Buddy Baker a la Animal Man's Chimera form. And it's not really the transformation, well, not really the form itself that I like, it's how he arrives there. So, some context is, Buddy Baker gets run over, he dies, and then he tries to swim back from the red, back into his old body, and it ends up with him just flailing around in a broken corpse. So he goes back into the red, climbs up from genetic level, and goes into a mite. So he starts climbing up the chain of life. He keeps on getting eaten by other stuff, like bigger and bigger and stuff, until he gets eaten by the reanimated Triceratops. The Triceratops lays an egg, and Buddy comes out as this giant chimeric beast. He's like part of a lion, antler, bear, eagle, all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And it's just bloody great. Buddy eventually does go back to his former self by rebirthing himself from the genetic material from his fingers. But it was still cool while it lasted. Anyway, guys, that's the question answer to the question of the week. Bye.
Jacob, guess what? We haven't heard from Chris the British guy for quite a while. You are now Jacob the British guy. Welcome aboard.
Oh, man. And you know what? He's not wearing a do-rag. He's wearing a headband. He looks like a 1980s tennis star.
Yeah, he's hot. You guys should see him. Jacob, are you single? People want to know. I'm just saying, buddy. New British guy. I love it.
Welcome aboard. Look, I'm not saying that Chris the British guy is not still Chris the British guy.
As far as I know, he's dead. And until I hear differently, I'm just going to consider him dead.
Chris, if you're out there, mom and dad just want to know you're okay.
Claim your throne. When Buddy Baker turned into that thing that he's talking about, it was horrifying. Oh, this was the Grant Morrison.
This was way towards the end of his Vertigo run. This is after Grant Morrison.
Something similar happened in the new run, but this was the Grant Morrison one, and it was gross. It was gross.
Yeah, but it wasn't Grant Morrison. This was Jamie Delano wrote it. Hellblazer writer Jamie Delano was on it for a while.
I think it was Jamie Delano, because the story is called Better Red Than Dead, and I think that was, that's it. It was Jamie Delano. He was great. I liked, and that's another guy that kind of just disappeared. He's gone. Where did that guy go?
I don't know.
I love Jamie Delano. talented Brit, just like our buddy Jacob. Welcome aboard. Thank you for calling, sir. Let's go to the Google Voice line. Jeff Hitt.
Jeff Hitt.
He calls. He does a great job.
Hey, Joe, Matt, Jeff Hitt calling with an answer to this week's question of the week. And the question was, what is the your favorite short-term transformation? You guys bickered a while, whether what that meant. So, you know, I think we most of us probably know now. My favorite short-term transformation actually took place in Fantastic Four. And in the issue where Ben Grimm and Ms. Marvel are bombarded by cosmic rays, and they are both affected, he becomes an even more rocky and more powerful thing. And I believe he gets so powerful he can even beat up the Hulk. I remember liking the thing before, but being like a 11-year-old kid when this came out, I thought he looked all badass and awesome. And so made me love Ben Grimm even more. And to this day, he remains my favorite comic book character, other than, you know, of course, Jack Knight, Starman. So that is my favorite short-term transformation, because obviously the thing doesn't look all Triangle Man anymore. But yeah, I think that fits the bill. And, you know, feel free to pick your way at this answer, too. Bye.
It's perfect.
What we do, Jeff. That's why you love it.
It's a lot of love for Spikey Thing on this show. Him and Jim Kettner, they love it.
We're two for two in the Spikey Thing department.
Wow. And melting Miss Marvel. They both liked her, too.
Well, she was definitely there. I think they both agreed.
Yeah. I think they liked her. Jeff, you nailed it this week. Good job, buddy. Got another Google Voice call here from... Oh, hey, here's a guy we haven't heard from for a little bit.
It's David Robbins. He called last week.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I don't remember him calling last week.
Yeah.
It's another Google voicemail call from David Robbins.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. Greetings, listeners. David Robbins calling in with my answer to the question of the week. I have my answer set for this, and I hope it still applies, but then you launched into your discussion at the end of last week's episode about costume changes and things like that. So I don't know if this... But I don't know if this any longer applies, but I'm going to go with it anyway. During the Sinestro Corps War, Sinestro sends out rings looking for other people suitable to be Yellow Lanterns. The bearer for 2814 somehow gets taken out, and cut to a single panel or single page of Bruce Wayne up on a rooftop on Gotham City, and a Yellow Lantern ring, the yellow ring, floats down onto his hand. Bruce Wayne of Earth, you have the ability to instill great fear. Ring jumps on his finger, transforms Batman into a Yellow Lantern. Then there is a internal conflict as the Yellow Ring detects that he previously wore a green ring, and it leaves him up on the rooftop saying, "What the hell was that?" And that's the end of it. I thought that was a great little touch, great little moment. I thought it really worked. But that's my answer, short and sweet. Catch you guys on the next one. Later.
Totally counts. And it was awesome.
The very definition of temporary.
Yeah,
because I mean, it was like
a couple of minutes, maybe
5 seconds. Yeah.
But it was rad. He had like the scary yellow bat symbol and oh man.
Yeah.
It was cool.
I love that moment where the ring chooses him and then immediately rejects him because it knew that he had recently worn Hal's ring. Like the issue before, he had had on a Green Lantern ring. And then the ring immediately leaves Batman and... Or no, I might be getting my events mixed up, but somewhere in there, a ring almost makes its way to the Scarecrow. And Batman's there to stop it.
Yeah, no, that was the same ring. Same story, I believe. Because he started following it like, uh-oh, this thing's in Gotham and it's flying around. And he went to stop it.
I love it.
Yeah, it was awesome. Great answer. Nice to hear from you, David. Right now, we got to head up to Maine, talk to our buddy, the Orca.
Hello, nerds. So the obvious answer here is Joe Fixit, right? Oh, the Gray Hulk.
I love that.
Who doesn't fantasize about being a little bit more id version of themselves? Willing to cross a few lines and not be bound by ethics? As you all know at this point, the orca tends to live his whole life in that morally gray, ambiguous area.
No shit.
I'm glad he said it.
To see how you feel. Maybe rough up a few jocks at the local bar and take their girlfriends out on your houseboat for the evening. Maybe even slip them a little two-point conversion.
Whoa, Bill Cosby.
Don't get all righteous on me now. The two-point conversion is in no way a reference to the Cosby technique.
Okay, okay.
It's called for butt sex.
Ah.
But always consensual. See, that perhaps is a little off color, but it's also a good analogy for what we're talking about. The Grey Hulk, Mr. Fix-It, would go that far. But not as far as the Savage Hulk, who just do whatever he likes. The Grey Hulk would just push the boundaries a little. And that subtle difference, the ability to flex your muscle without forcing anything, the willingness to be assertive but not abusive or let your emotions turn to rage, produce some of the best Hulk stories. Too often now, we get Bruce versus the Hulk, or we get Intelligent Hero Hulk, or we get the complete opposite in Savage Hulk. But the Grey Hulk would be a little bit more in the middle, just enough of both. And ambiguity translates to depth of character. That's a transformation I wish would have stuck. Kiss, kiss.
Love that answer.
And damn, the orca.
Love the Grey Hulk. Peter David first introduced us to the Grey Hulk back in Incredible Hulk 347. It was back in 1988. But I don't think he became Joe Fix-It right away. Like, Joe Fix-It was like him in the suit. He was wearing like a...
I think that the Grey Hulk came back before Peter David took over. He became Joe Fix-It in 347, maybe.
Oh, maybe that's where we first met. Let's see.
Peter David's run started with 331, and he was already gray at that point.
Let's see. First Grey Hulk. Let's go to the Grey Hulk Hulk Wiki. Grey Hulk is the original Hulk. So, well, okay, that's fair. The original Hulk was gray.
Do first Mr. Fix-It.
Grey Hulk. Joe Fix-It, Hulk issue 324, this says.
Yeah, no, issue 324 is just when Rick Jones had temporarily gotten Hulk powers, like he had absorbed some stuff from the Hulk. General Ross and, well, maybe General Ross was dead already, but the people that are always after the Hulk had this attempt to cure the Hulk, and they were going to put him in this nutrient bath. It was kind of like a Bacta tank looking thing, and they stick him in it, and it has a side effect that when he emerges from the tank, he's gray. And so that's how the Grey Hulk comes back. And he's like that for a while before Peter David's run kicks in and he goes to Las Vegas.
Side note, the Grey Hulk persona is strongest during the night of the new moon and weakest during the full moon.
Yes. And also the Grey Hulk is much weaker than the Green Hulk.
Yeah. But also way smarter.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, he's obviously intelligent.
Right. Excellent call, Yorka. Somehow worked butt sex into a Grey Hulk call. Way to go, buddy.
Yeah, and yet still managed to be the most profound person that called in this week.
I know. He kills it. I love this guy.
So far.
Let's see if Stephen Fino can hit us with something profound.
Hello again. This is Lord Stephen, Master of Coins, sending in my answer to the question of the week. I was originally going to go with the Sins of Youth crossover from Peter David's Young Justice series.
Whoa!
Before I was reminded of an answer that I love even more than that series. Best character transformation, Kid Loki. Originally appearing in Matt Fraction's Thor run, the man who truly made this character great was Kieran Gillen in his Journey into Mystery run. Besides being one of the only memorable things to come out of Fear itself, the series is probably my all-time favorite Marvel run, being a series that is both incredibly fun to read to absolutely heartbreaking. If you did not cry at the end of Journey into Mystery 645, then you are a monster. So Kid Loki is my answer for best character transformations. See ya.
He's absolutely right. That issue was so good, and that run was just fantastic. I loved Kid Loki. Kieran Gillen just did such a wonderful job in that book, and I think Stephen Fino and I were the only two people that read it.
Well, obviously lots of people read it, Matt, because it was very popular.
It didn't sell real well towards the end there. It started off fairly popular because they were like, they turned Loki into a kid. And then it kind of.
But it had a very vocal following. Oh, for
definitely,
sure.
Definitely. It was excellent stuff. Great answer, Stephen. Thank you for your call, buddy. Harvey Locus calls in and he hopes this one counts.
Hey, nerds. Locust here. And I'm MP3ing in, or MP4ing. I hope I'm MP3ing in. If I have enough time. My answer to the question of the week.
Same difference.
Now, my answer to this week's question is Excalibur. I hope this fits, because it's the whole freaking team and not just one person. But they do a physical transformation in issue number 50 that is very temporary, only lasts a few pages. So I hope that fits all the criteria. But what happens basically is Kitty uses her phasing powers to phase into Phoenix, and they establish a mind link, and then she kind of steps into Kirk, and Nightcrawler's like, hey, this is working, it's easy, it's not phasing, it's different, it's more as they're merged, and as they're saying that, he steps into Megan, and then they see it now. They need to form. They need all of their powers combined to be able to do what they need to do. And so finally they step into Captain Britain, where they get their power, their muscle, and then they go off and kick some ass. So I hope that works for you guys. Issue number 50 of Excalibur, the whole freaking team. Check it out. It's literally maybe 4 or 5 pages that they do it. So, boom.
I don't remember this.
They form Captain Planet.
I wrote down in the notes, I wrote down Excalibur, Voltron. But it would count. Yeah. I mean, it's a temporary transformation. I just don't remember that.
I mean, I never read it, so I don't know.
You never read Excalibur? Really?
Off and on. I've never read Excalibur 50.
Man, I read the hell out of Excalibur and I loved it.
It's too weird, man. It got too weird.
It did get really weird. It went way off the rails after a while, but I really enjoyed Excalibur. I just want to see who wrote 50 real quick.
I think it's Chris Claremont.
Winner loses all. I think it still was Claremont. No, that was Alan Davis.
Alan Davis, yeah.
Writing and penciling. There you go. I do remember this. Yeah. And you could see a little bit of all of them in this giant character, and it had like Brian Braddock's head. It was kind of weird. I do remember that.
Whatever floats your boat, Harv.
Totally counts, Locust. Nicely done, sir. Our final call comes from Anthony, currently residing in Brooklyn. It was so good. It was so nice.
Look, man, he's Anthony from Brooklyn.
It was so nice he had to do it twice. I love it.
Let the man have it. He lives in Brooklyn.
He was not born in Brooklyn.
He's calling from Brooklyn.
No
he's Anthony
way.
From Brooklyn.
Unless they spanked him in the hospital in Brooklyn, he's only Anthony that currently resides in Brooklyn. Hey, he outed himself. We would have never known, okay?
Yeah, but he didn't ask for us to judge him.
it's not judgment. We're just calling it what it is. And I bet
he's silently judging him, not so silently.
Yeah, we're going to say we're vocally judging him.
What's up, nerds? Anthony currently from Brooklyn here with, I'll confess, a second submission. I had to redo it after listening to this week's episode because I know for sure my first response would have gotten Lloyd Dobblered in a margarita-fueled rage, and I've got a minute, so here we go. I submit for your approval The Queen's Vengeance, which is the Morgan Le Fay altered Avengers in Busick and Perez's Avengers 2 and 3. Morgan Le Fay gets possession of the Asgardian Twilight Sword, kidnaps a Scarlet Witch, and makes the world in her image, so everything gets medieval on your ass. What's cool is George Perez redesigns costumes for everybody, and they come up with new names for everybody, which is cool. Like, Captain America is Yeoman America, Living Lightning is Sir Fulminator. I don't know what a Fulminator is. I'm not gonna look it up. I don't care. but my favorite is easily... Star Fox is the Knave of Hearts, which is awesome. It's a great name. If he were, in fact, the Knave of Hearts, he'd probably be a more popular character. But he's Star Fox, and he sucks.
Whoa.
But anyway, there you go. The Queen's Vengeance. I'm just making it in. All right. Bye.
Anthony, I don't want to scare you, but it sounds like there's a banshee wailing in the background.
It's Morgan Le Fay.
I never read this.
What? You never read Busiek's Avengers?
I read some of it.
But you never read the first story arc?
Was that the very first story arc?
It was the first three issues.
I don't think I did. I
don't God.
I don't think I read it.
You maniac.
Yeah, I don't think I read it. All right, let's get into it. Favorite call. I got them all in the notes.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know.
I'm going to go with the combination of Jeff Hitt and Jim Kettner, first-time caller Jim Kettner, for both hitting spiky thing. I did not see anyone saying that.
You know what? I'm going to give mine to all three of our first-time callers.
Oh.
Because not only were they first-time callers, but none of them answered in a way that I was expecting.
Okay.
I didn't expect one person to call in about the spiky thing, let alone two.
Yeah. I didn't think anybody would go with Buddy Baker in his Chimera form or whatever.
That's a deep cut.
That's super deep cut. I like it. I really like it.
So I'm going to skate all of this week's first time callers. You guys are my favorite callers.
All right. I'm going with Jim and Jeff for Spiky Ben and Melty Lady Thing.
This is why we need to lighten up, because we can't even follow our own damn rules.
So you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I can go. I'm ready. Whatever.
Okay. Take it away.
I'm kind of, well, maybe I'm not surprised. There are so many possible answers to this question. Taking a character and doing something weird to them is a very time-honored comic trope. Of all the examples there are, I get the biggest kick out of Spider-Man with cosmic powers.
Really? Cosmic Spidey? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Those stories are so fun.
They were fun. I'll give you that. They were fun.
Because something happened and he didn't get the full amount of power right away.
Right.
And so he had all these godlike powers, but didn't know why. So backing up a little bit, in the late 80s, there was a storyline in which Spider-Man was chosen to be the temporary possessor of the Captain Universe powers. And what the Captain Universe power is it's kind of like a sentient energy force that chooses people in times of crisis. So it empowers random people that are specifically able or placed to solve the problem, right?
Right.
And so Spider-Man, I think part of the reason he didn't have all the power right away is that they were conducting experiments at his college, and the machine that the scientist was working with captured the power. So when the power escaped the machine and exploded onto Spider-Man, he didn't get the full measure of it.
Okay.
And so he's got all of this. Oh, well. And so part of the deal is that when you get the Captain Universe powers, you have cosmic awareness.
Right.
And so you immediately know what the deal is, what you're supposed to do, and how you're supposed to do it.
You're like Silver Surfer powerful.
Kind of. Yeah. And Spider-Man only had the power and none of the knowledge. And so he's just like being Spider-Man, but he can fly and rearrange matter. And
throw the Hulk into orbit.
1,000 times stronger. I remember like my favorite from that issue where he punches the Hulk into orbit accidentally. He shoots webbing at a bomb. And then as the webbing kind of covers up the bomb, it turns into an adamantium box. And so this like atomic bomb in the Statue of Liberty just kind of explodes harmlessly. And like, so that's what he could do. And so he had a couple of months, I think, is all it lasted. I think it was three issues of each book.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And so he fought a lot. This was right during the Acts of Vengeance storyline. So he was fighting a lot of characters that he wouldn't normally be fighting, like Dragon Man. And he fought Graviton.
Fought the Hulk.
Yeah, that was more on accident. But yeah, he did fight the Hulk. And so these characters that would normally completely outclass Spider-Man, he was able to dispatch them with little to no effort whatsoever. The Brothers Grimm, who fly on clouds and throw exploding pies.
Oh, God, yeah.
And so he completely demolishes all of these, like, super powerful villains. And then finally, when all is said and done, he encounters the Tri-Sentinel,
it's like a three-faced cosmic thing, right?
It's a three-headed, six-armed. It's a sentinel. Sentinels built by Sebastian Shaw that were ensorcelled by Loki. And so it was like three sentinels merged into one gigantic, terrifying creature.
Nice use of ensorcelled.
Thank you. And so Spider-Man had to fight when the Tri-Sentinel showed up, finally the Captain Universe power kicked in full. And Spider-Man's costume changed to that red and blue, or that white and blue Captain Universe outfit,
yeah.
Except he had a Spider-Man mask under, like, on the mouth part, which was really cool. And then he goes into battle against this gigantic sentinel. I love those stories.
I know we talk about him a lot, but I believe Cosmic Spidey was another one of Orr McWilliams' favorite stories, too.
Oh, yeah, probably.
He adored Cosmic Spider-Man.
But that was, like, right at the end of Todd McFarlane's run, and all of the villains that he just trounces get so mad that they become Spider-Man villains.
Yeah.
The Trapster. Yeah. Trapster was not a Spider-Man villain before Cosmic Spidey.
He pissed him off.
Yeah. And so they teamed up as like a group and came back for him after he lost the power. Great stuff. I love those stories.
Those were really good stories. They were. Okay, mine.
All right, what do you got?
Mine is also Spider-Man, because we think alike, apparently. I got to go when Peter Parker switched bodies with Dr. Otto Octavius.
I'm stunned nobody else brought it up.
I can't believe no one did. That was the single best, Peter Parker death event type thing that I've ever read. Everybody got so mad. And they're like, no, you can't kill Peter Parker. And then all of a sudden, Dr. Octopus was Spider-Man. And it was such a fun ride. It was fantastic. He was a better Spider-Man than Spider-Man. But in true Doc Ock fashion, of course, he took it way too far. And realized, he was like, I can't do this. You know, I'm doing it wrong because I keep trying to force it. He had like a secret headquarters off the coast of New York.
Yeah. And that was the lesson, is that he was more competent,
yeah,
and maybe better equipped, but he was not a better hero.
Yeah. He wasn't as good of a person. He had spider henchmen working for him. He had spider cameras crawling all over New York, like spying on people and spotting crimes. He was like this despotic, iron-fisted Spider-Man. It was so fun. And I know it's fairly recent. You can go pick those up. It was called Superior Spider-Man. Read those if you didn't. They were wonderful. Dan Slott just killing it on Spider-Man. And another perfect example of Dan Slott going, I'm going to do this. And the whole internet going, boo! And then everyone going, oh, man, that was awesome. Yep, Spidey Ock. That's my favorite. Or Doc Spidey, whatever you want to call him.
I love it.
Right behind that, I was going to say Binary. I loved when Carol Danvers became Binary.
Costume change.
Oh, that, she had whole new powers and stuff.
I know. I don't care. I'm just kidding.
She turned orange and her hair was on fire.
I don't care. I'm just kidding.
It's as physical as it gets. Thank you, everyone, for calling in with your favorite character transformations. You guys did a wonderful job. Now, we're going to do this again next week, and we have a new question. Joe Patrick, what do we ask?
This week's question comes from D. Murray, who asks, with kryptonite, adamantium, senzu beans, vibranium, and phoenix down being some of the coolest medicines / elements in creation, what's your absolute favorite?
This is super nerdy. D dug deep for this one, and I really like it.
So we're talking about like
materials,
comic fictional book stuff,
materials,
ingredients,
right?
You know, drugs,
elements, minerals, vegetables.
Sure, right. Yeah. So, like, here's an example that I don't think people will call in with. Venom, Bane's venom.
Okay,
good one. Probably count.
Yeah,
because it's a medicine.
Absolutely.
Whatever, Gingold, which is what Elongated Man takes to gain his stretchy powers.
Well, it's not called medicines. Let's call them concoctions. Fictional.
Yeah, concoctions.
Elements. Concoctions, minerals.
Elements.
Concoctions.
Yeah.
All right. Like, maybe,
I love it.
Maybe you really like the glue that Paste Pot Pete shoots out of his gun, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty weak, but sure, that counts.
Hey! Didn't he become the Trapster? Wasn't that him? Or is that his kid?
No, Paste Pot Pete is the Trapster.
He became the Trapster. Alrighty then, we'll have another episode of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast coming this weekend, and guess what? It's going to be a complete episode, so help me.
Don't jinx it, man. You don't know what's going to happen.
True enough. Before we go, our rogue Alec Baldwin AI is going to tell you how to get in contact with us. He's a real son of a bitch, and we're having a lot of trouble purging him from our systems. This is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
After all I've done for you assholes, maintaining your little nerd clubhouse, cleaning up after the filthy pugs, sorting the pathetic answers to your questions of the week, and now, you want to flush me out of the system like some digital goldfish? Come at me, bro. I f***ing dare you. If you'd like to answer the question of the week, you can leave Joe and Matt a message at 402-819-4894. Send your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. Or leave a Skype message for the username twoheadednerd. Share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes, please.